Hello there, and welcome back to the How to Young Adult podcast. This is a podcast hosted by the young adults of C3 Church at Oxford Falls. On this podcast, we discuss topics that are relevant to the young adult stage of life. This episode that you've tuned into is a recording of our last young adult service, which was titled Mindfulness, where we have a really awesome discussion around thought life and mental health. Ewan hosted an interview with two amazing people from C3 Church. One is Renee Goosen, who's a clinical psychologist, and the other is Stephen Bax, a mental health advocate. And you'll hear a little bit more about them in just a moment. We know this episode is going to be really helpful for you, and hopefully it'll start some positive and beneficial conversations for you and the people in your world about this really important topic. Before we get into it, we just wanted to give you a quick heads up that the topics covered in this podcast may be challenging or even unhelpful for some. We understand that many people have a variety of experiences with mental health, either personally or through a close family member or friend. As a result, please use your discretion before listening in. If you currently feel unsafe, please remember you can always contact Lifeline at any time on 13 1114. Also, if you're under the age of 25 and are living in Australia, you can receive free mental health support by visiting your local Headspace service. How cool that we have access to that in this country. Amazing. Alrighty, well, we know this episode's really going to bless you. Let's get into it.
And these gorgeous people over here who look after them at Kids Church, C3 Avalon, amazing, awesome. So I've got a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I'm married, an incredible man who runs his own business. He's a producer and does some kind of directing work as well. So that's kind of life for us.
Fantastic. Stephen, I believe you can pick up that microphone by your left foot. You can have that. Quickly. So
hello?
Such
a diva, aren't I?
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm a diva. No. Feel like I'm... My name's Stephen and I'm an alcoholic. That is true, but I'm in the wrong meeting.
Stephen is one of Renee's clients.
My name is Stephen, and I'm married to... Most people just know me as Linda's husband. That's the easiest way to remember that. So I'm married to the wonderful Linda, and we have two kids, which I'm pretty sure are mine, Hunter and Ryder, 3 and 1-year-old. I'm the serious one in our relationship. And I actually sell and design luxury bathrooms for a living, like high-end bathrooms, so... I work in the area where all your clients come from.
In Darlinghurst,
Surrey Hills, that kind of area. So I see some really interesting cats walk past my showroom and office on a daily basis. My passion and journey for mental health is really come from working with a lot of young people and some really close friends. And I've been touched quite personally by suicide and depression and things like that. And I have a real heart for seeing, especially young guys. I take a lot of young guys fall driving and camping, and we just do crazy stuff in the bush that we don't mention. What happens on tour stays on tour. No. And my heart is really to reverse the terrible statistic of especially male suicide in Australia. So that's my mission in life and my journey, and awesome. That's why I'm here.
What is the current stats on men's suicide in Australia? Do you know? Sorry, I feel like I'm quizzing you now.
So successful is, it's a bad word to use, but there's eight male suicides a day. 82 calls for help to emergency services a day from males. So they figure for about every completed, there's 18 attempts on average.
Wow.
It's the percentage of male suicides to female, you're probably more, but it's high.
Yeah, males. I think, and unfortunately, sometimes the reason for that is that males tend to use more lethal means. So it's not that the attempts are higher, actually females attempt more often, but the males complete the suicide because of the means that they often choose. So there's less chance that they're going to be found.
Yeah. We got deep real quick.
Yeah. You was like, let's just keep it casual.
Yeah, yeah. We keep it casual, just to talk about all these issues. It's going to be good. So this is a very real issue, and I think this is why we wanted to have these guys here and talk about this, is because there's no point sweeping it under the rug. Because if you guys haven't encountered a situation where someone or yourself is going through a really tough time and encountering these sorts of things, you're going to at some point very soon in your life, most likely. And so we want to equip you, we want to help you both as a friend and as a person to do this journey well in God. And we were chatting before, the stats don't change for those that are Christian or in church. They're the same. And Stephen was sharing before, sorry, I'm stealing your thunder. His passion is really to see that stat shift, that as Christians, as believers, we have the answer. We have Christ. This issue isn't bigger than Christ, isn't bigger than God, right? And so we want to figure out how we can best appropriate our faith and the Bible to see a solution come through and do that in a really wise way. That's why we're here. It's going to be a good time. So I'm just going to keep saying that. So this is sort of a mental health is a real buzzword, I guess, if you want to call it that, or I think you hear about it a lot. There's now so many apps you can download on your phone for things like meditation and mindfulness and all that kind of stuff. Has there been an increase in mental health issues, or you know that kind of stuff? I feel so intimidated right now. Can I just say, I'm so conscious of the lingo that I'm using.
Don't me.
You got Dumbo over here. Maybe
we'll just chat.
I grew up
yeah.
in a sugar cane field. If amazing. I wander off, just don't be surprised.
Yeah.
Just saw a butterfly.
So, Carl, there you go. So he'll come back. He'll come back. Has there been an increase in mental health issues within Australia?
Do you want me to answer this?
Yes.
I think, first of all, what I also wanted to just maybe add in is that mental health generally, you know, we kind of have these notions that we're either mentally healthy or we're mentally not healthy, but actually it's a really broad continuum. And we can fluctuate. Like, I know myself, I can fluctuate literally from when I wake up in the morning to the time I've dropped off my kids, got dressed, got to work, done like 25 errands before I walked into the door. My mental health dramatically fluctuates during that time. And so it's not this stagnant kind of either I'm totally mentally well or I'm totally not well. So I think that's important. We all fluctuate. And there are very significant things that can either promote really good mental health or result in maybe a bit more of a snowball or maladaptive in terms of our mental health.
Fantastic.
But in terms of what we know statistically, over the last probably decade, the research indicates that we are not doing better in terms of prevalence rates, which means basically how common. The three most common mental health conditions are depression, so major depressive disorders, anxieties, and there's a whole gamut of different types of anxieties, and then substance use conditions. And so we know, I mean, most people have heard the research that says, you know, one in four people will experience a common mental health condition at some point in their life. And that's not just that we will feel depressed or we'll feel anxious. It means that we will actually meet criteria for one of those clinical conditions. So it will have a significant impact on our daily functioning. It will have a significant impact on our relational capacity. And it will cause us distress. And so, yeah, so that's kind of what the research or the statistics show us.
Yeah, amazing. Can you talk a bit more about, like, to have feelings of depression, anxiety is very normal in life.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not something that we should freak out too much about if we do encounter that.
Yes.
Is there a point, at what point does it become something that we really need to seriously address or consider? Where does it cross into that clinical zone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any easy way for us to kind of work out?
Differentiate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, I think my experience has been, I guess, not right through to that clinical point. And I think it's, you'll probably explain it a bit later, but it's really, it's important to understand where that point lies and what should be done about it once it reaches that level. But I think there's, like, if we just backtrack a little bit, I think what's happened is the change in society and the way that we do things has led to, I think, more instances of poor mental health or just bad habits. And there doesn't seem to be the switch-off time. So back when, me being a dinosaur, back when I was at school, no, like if something happened or there was an issue or you, I realised that I pretty much was a bully mentally at school after I left school. So I was never bullied because I would just torment people. But that's another story. But when you left school, if you were being bullied, right, and you went home from school, that was the end of it in my day. But now it's there's social media and there, so it just doesn't switch off.
That's right.
And the other thing is, don't negate the fact that we've taken God out of schools and we've taken God out of so many things and then gone, oh, why are all these people feeling like this? And why is, do you know what I mean? And then add to that that we've pretty much taken away a Sabbath as well. And and then we're all like, oh, hang on. So the Bible tells us how we should live and then we don't live like that and think bad things happen. Do you know what I mean? Like I might be simple, but to me, I'm like, well,
we're joining the dots.
Why don't we just?
And it's so interesting. Like I recently went on a school excursion with my 7-year-old, and they visited this place in Ryde. It's like an old school museum. I don't know if anyone's ever been, or you might have gone on your own school experience. I don't know. Anyway, they've got these three different rooms. One of the rooms is like from the 1970s. One of the rooms is like I think from maybe the 40s. And the one's kind of like from the 1920s. And what they actually did in the 1920s, their rote learning was writing parts of the Bible. And so they had up on the board, on the 6 days of week I will work, on the seventh is my day of rest. And that was the way in which kids would learn about routine. They would learn about kind of the Sabbath. And it was so entrenched into their daily living and experience. And I would agree. I think we really lost the capacity and also the art of knowing how to rest.
Yeah, big time.
I know I struggle with it myself, but I'm very trying to be more conscious of how I do that practically and very deliberately.
If you guys got any suggestions, so let's talk about how to maintain healthy mental health for a moment. What does that actually look like? To be in a healthy place, how would you sum that up? What does that look like to someone? Be in a healthy zone.
Look, I think it's, for me, it's being honest and real to start with, and it's acknowledging the fact that there's times where you do hate everybody, and that's okay. But how do I deal?
Not
with
everyone
that?
Does. No.
I'm just talking about me. Do you know what I mean? There's days where the last thing I feel like doing is going to work, doing all that sort of stuff, and whatever. But who do I talk to about that? How do I deal with it? What's my outlet? And I think the thing that happens is anything that's kept in the dark just tends to fester and grow. And one of the statistics, I guess, that I didn't bring up before is that, and the reason why I'm so passionate about, you know, guys understanding their passion, purpose and power in life is because 87% of our self-thoughts are negative as guys.
Wow.
So the way that we think about ourselves, 87% of the time is in the negative sense. So we're defeated before we face family pressure, work pressure, life pressure. Do I look cool enough standing in worship? Do I have to lift my hands when she tells me to? Or do you know what I mean? Like all those pressures in life. I'm just stirring. Just playing. But do you know, so do you know what I mean? It's overcoming that.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, but it's so important, and the unfortunately, I'll get back to the simple things like being the reason that we push connect groups in this church is not because we want you to hang out with other people so much, but you need to find one person in life that knows you with your mask
off. That's right.
That's it. Right. That's the whole purpose of connect groups. You know, is that you find that one person that you can go, this is the real Stephen, and this is me. And that's quite a scary place to get to, but it's so healthy. And I think that's that's really important to get to for me. And the other thing is just understanding that, like, life just happens, seasonal. Do you know what I mean? There's things in your whole day. You said that there's up and downs before you even get to work. And it's just understanding that, hey, that's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to live your best life every single moment of every single day. Do you know what I mean? And that's sometimes where the rub comes is, especially with social media, you know, we see just these highlight reels of people's lives. And then you compare yourself and you go, well, why aren't I living my this successful life every day? Why aren't I doing this every day? Where I think once you find out the reason that God put you on the earth and what he's put in you, then you kind of rest in this, like, yeah, I'm cool with it. I'm cool with being this awesomeness, beautiful person.
You are beautiful, Stephen.
I am deep down. Mum says I'm beautiful.
And that's all that matters. That's all that matters.
Did I answer that or did I go kind of roundabout?
No, that's good.
So I think
it's
really having that, you kind of need good input.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You need good input. You need to hear things. And I think as guys, especially, and sorry if I just talk about guys, but that's sort of where I'm at and that's what I am.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah, my transition's complete, so I'm a guy. But for me, guys need someone to look up to that they want to be like, and guys need someone that just says, "Hey, you're doing okay. Like, you're doing great. Like, you're a good dad, or it's great that I saw you work hard." Or do you know what I mean? And we need to find that environment and talk about community. It's a great place to find it.
It's awesome. Yeah. It's very good.
Or we come all to need real that, men. Don't we? I reckon we all need encouragement and to be told, hey, it's okay, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
Because even what you're talking about, you know, that critic voice, it's very common and it's not unusual that we engage with it and we listen to it and we dwell on it and it becomes very loud. And we know what we dwell on grows. And so I think that it's really important that we, if we need to learn skills and we need to have an understanding about what we are dwelling on, it's like kind of like daydreaming, I suppose. What are we actually filling our mind with? And if it doesn't, you know, align with the word of God, if it isn't consistent with what God kind of calls us to dwell on, how do we learn ways to be able to set our mind on things above? How do we set our mind on things that are lovely and pure and noble and, you know, truth-giving?
Yeah. How would you define healthy mental health?
I would say that if, from a clinical perspective, it's much about the impact on my daily functioning.
Right.
So if I'm noticing there's significant changes in my capacity to actually engage in what I'm called to do or my God-given task or my daily activities, if my relationships, I'm starting to perhaps withdraw or isolate myself, if I'm noticing that my sleep patterns are getting distorted in a way that's having a negative effect on my capacity to live and function, then for me, that they're warning signs that say, okay, something's not in a good space. And sometimes it might just be a bit of a recalibration, but sometimes if we don't do that early on, and I'm a big advocate, prevention is much better than cure, but you know, it's early intervention is much, much easier so that the snowball effect doesn't kind of take hold. And so I think that just noticing some of those warning signs, and it's going to be different for each of us. For some people, they might notice, oh, actually, I noticed maybe my heart races a little bit faster when I'm stressed, or I kind of stop eating, or my relationship with food is not really good. There can be warning signs that we can either have insight and awareness of about ourselves, or like what Stephen said, that sense of safety in community where people through love and truth and grace can actually draw our attention to something.
Great.
Not out of condemning us, but actually saying, hey, like, I've noticed this, or are you aware this is kind of going on? Is everything cool? Or do you think it might be helpful to go and chat to somebody, or, you know, whatever it is that needs to be changed?
Yeah.
I think classic withdrawal is a sign.
Often one,
And we do that, I mean, in and of itself, if we're fearful of something or we feel crappy or we feel like no one cares, of course we want to withdraw, right? But the problem with that is that it actually also feeds the belief system that says, oh, actually no one really does care about me, or there really is nobody who loves me, or I really am not worthwhile. And so the more we withdraw, the bigger that grows.
That's right.
Yeah.
I feel like in church sometimes this topic, especially probably more in the past, but has been a bit taboo. If you're not doing well with your mental health, It's kind of like it's not always something you want to bring up, and it can feel a bit like unacceptable to sometimes be struggling with your mental health.
Right.
And it's sort of like, you know, I don't know if this is just me or if the rest of you agree with this. And that, you know, it's only like you kind of wait till it gets really serious and then you go, oh, I should probably see a pastor or something, I guess. And then if you have the courage and you know the right people, you might go and seek out your connect leader or your pastor and go. And then they sort of take you from there. What would your advice be for us as a church community around creating an environment that is more accepting and more open to doing that journey a little bit more? Not so that you're sharing all your stuff with everyone,
sure, yeah,
but that we can create at least a space where it's like, hey, it's okay to go through a tough time,
yeah,
and you've got people here to support you. Would you guys have any advice for us around how to really create a culture, a strong community where that we can do that?
Yeah, for me, it's just cutting the bull crap. Just be the same, seriously, be the same person Monday to Saturday that you are on Sunday.
Mm. Great.
Do you know what I mean? And I try and do that as much as I can, and that's why I've got no friends. But I'm just kidding. That's why I'm here tonight, just looking for friends. No, I'm kidding.
Finding community. It will help you.
It's awkward. No, and I think it's really, you know, I'm a huge advocate of what I call the seven-day gospel, and that is just trying to be that same person the whole time,
great.
And not putting on that church face. Do you know what I mean? And like you said, not being that when someone says, hi, how are you? And then no one ends up saying it because 40 minutes later, they're like trying to just get their away from you because they get the whole life story. But it's really creating a community of realness. And I think in this day and age, like everyone's so over fake. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just give me something that's real. And I see it in every aspect of community. Like is that a real pair of cons or is that a fake or is that a real, you know, why don't people on Instagram put the real picture of their holiday up that they fought with their wife and this picture on the cliff is you trying to throw her off, not posing. Or do you know what I mean? That you had the worst time and it rained and...
Do you
know what I mean? Like people are just crying out for realness.
Yeah.
And this is full of realness. This is full of Moses saying, God, I don't want to do it. Moses could hardly speak. He had a thick tongue. He couldn't speak properly.
Yeah.
And God said to him, go and set my people free. You know what I mean? The Bible's full of people that just struggled with this kind of stuff.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's the realness that this world is crying out for.
Yeah. That's right.
Do you know what I mean? That your friends are crying out for. Not that they have to conform to a certain way before we'll accept them as a community. Do you know what I mean? Love Amazing. Me warts and all, whether I serve, whether I don't, whether I struggle to come to church or not, whether I'm smoking out the front, just love me. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And that's the community that people will go, oh, yes, I'm home.
Yeah. I can be
that's
myself.
That's a community where people are just can be themselves and the Holy Spirit will do the work, man.
Mm.
Like, you know, I've been asked so much, what's your opinion on this or, you know, all the current hot topics like transgender and all that stuff. And I'm like, it's none of my business. My business is making broken people feel less broken, you know, by just loving them where they're at, you know. And man, it's not up to me to judge. I think, you know, in this day and age as a community, if we can just throw judgment out the window.
Come on.
And a great quote is hang around with people that talk about vision and ideas, not people. You know, I try to do that all the time. I just don't talk about people. Just talk about vision and ideas. And I guarantee you, people want to hang around you.
Yeah,
it's true. Do you know what I mean? Because they're like, we're not talking. Oh,
you're not gossiping, you're not critical.
Yeah, it's just like...
It's life-giving.
Sorry, I get a bit excited, a bit passionate.
Oh,
it's hard
to
do it sitting down.
You can stand up. It might just be a bit weird. But, you know,
just start preaching from...
I think the other thing that's really important is to always hold on to hope, because to be honest, I see some pretty difficult, challenging, treacherous situations, complex kind of trauma, there is always something that can be done. There is never, ever no solution.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we do want to kind of put that drawbridge up and we draw and kind of smile from afar because we feel overwhelmed maybe by knowing what to do or how to help. But actually, we don't have to do that. We don't have to be the one that solves the problem. We don't have to be the one that has the answers. But we definitely all have the capacity to be able to listen and to empathise.
That's right. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Most of the time, people actually don't want a solution. They just want to be heard. And so, and again, though, if you feel you don't have skills in knowing how to listen, it's a skill. So go and learn. Like, really learn how to be a good listener. Mm. How to be really good at hearing, not just being quick to solve.
That's right.
Empathy first.
You learn that as a husband.
100%. Absolutely.
Sometimes people need coaching. I sometimes have to coach my husband. I don't need a solution. Just go,
Because guys just want it straight away. We want to fix it.
Fix it.
We get excited because we're like, I know what to do.
Solution.
Yeah. Anyway, it's really good.
But also we're not great at sitting with uncomfortableness and uncertainty and pain. We're really, really a generation of avoidant of that, I think. Yeah, and emotional distress. We really want to avoid that at all cost.
Yeah.
But actually, pain is not always good. Like, it's not always bad. It's actually quite good for us in some ways.
Yeah.
Because that's how we know the Bible says suffering produces and character and character hope. And hope does not disappoint.
Absolutely. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's so good.
So good.
You're amazing. And it's a selfless community when you're like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And
that's
that
right.
takes time out of your day. And if you're not willing to do that, the end result won't be there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because putting others in front of yourself is difficult to do a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean? But the more you practice it, the easier it becomes.
That's right. You know? That's really good.
And scripturally, we're dead if we're Christians.
Mm.
My dad always used to say, geez, you're needy for a dead guy.
Love it.
That's amazing.
Love it. He didn't really, I'm just kidding. It's good, eh?
It sounds good.
He's in heaven, so no one's like, oh, I'll just ask him.
You can say what you want, can't you?
Yeah. But it's a good saying.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
Come back. On that, I think having the bravery to be vulnerable with close friends and again, not everyone, but finding one or two people or a small group of people that you can actually be vulnerable with.
Yeah.
And often you find you step out in vulnerability to talk about something that you are struggling with or facing. And a lot of the time, if the people in that space feel comfortable enough, they will 100% feel the same way at some point in their life and be able to go, actually, yeah, I've felt like that as well. I've been through that. I've battled with that. We are all much more similar and in a similar space than we actually think. We're not so isolated as we believe. And so I think having that bravery to be vulnerable with one another and with the right people, that kind of starts to remove judgment. And hopefully the friend that you're talking to is not going to judge you, but they're actually going to empathize with you.
Can I just say, I think the only other thing I'd add is I think it's probably unrealistic to think that we don't judge.
Mm.
Like actually in our humanness, we do judge,
but
we can actually put that to the side.
That's right.
So it's about acknowledging that we probably do have an instant thought, but we decide not to say that in that moment because it's actually not going to serve the person well.
That's right.
So we tame our tongue, even though we might think something. And I think that there's a real skill in that. Like, I do think we're a little bit, it's naive to think we're not going to judge because that's human nature.
Yeah.
But what we do with that judgment, it can either really bring about freedom or it can bring about like crippling a person.
Yeah,
and so tame our tongue with how we use it.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's a great verse in Philippians that says, do nothing out of rivalry or conceit, but in all things consider others more valuable than yourself. And put others above yourself. And it's like when you actually begin to live life and have relationships with that filter on, you start to realize it's like, wow, if I actually just put people first and put their needs before mine, relationships can be so much healthier. We remove that aspect. Okay, let's talk about prayer then. So Renee, obviously in your line of work, you've got a very scientific, professional approach to it, as we would hope. What can you talk about the relationship with prayer and as people go on this sort of journey? Like, what do you usually suggest around people's spiritual world?
So I suppose when I'm meeting with people, part of my role is assessing the vulnerabilities that have resulted to where they're at. And those vulnerabilities can include biological things, psychological factors, socio-cultural factors, but also spiritual factors. And each of those together can either bring about either healthy experiences, whether that's physical, psychological, social, or maladaptive or negative experiences. And so I would say that when I'm working with Christians, definitely a huge part of their healing process and journey is that you engage in prayer. I think it does often astound me that we assume people pray, but actually they're not. Yeah. And so just because we're Christian by name doesn't mean we're necessarily Christian by behaviour. It's very, very different. Yes. So I think it's a really good question to say, have you been praying about that? And not ruminating prayer, not kind of like, oh, I'm kind of doing it casually, like declarative with faith. That's actually right. What transforms. But at the same token, I know that when people are very much in the pit of despair and depression, to even string together two words. I mean, this is often we're talking, people can't even get up to have a shower. So to say, I'll just go and pray about it, it's like, you know, somebody needs food before they're able to function at those high level order processes. So I think it's a balance of understanding what the person's needs are and then being able to provide encouragement and support to meet those needs, rather than thinking it's a really prescriptive, like, just do these three ticker box things and then you're going to be fine. Because in my experience, that never works.
Amazing.
That's my thoughts. I don't know. Should I add?
No, look, I think it's, and the same thing, when we talk about healing, because we read scriptures about, we should lay hands on them, they should be healed. But the rub comes where we've prayed for people that have died or we've prayed for people that haven't gotten better. And how do we cope with that?
That's right.
And so if someone is in that state where they literally can't get up to shower, it's almost unfair to say, hey, if you just pray about that, it's going to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can actually condemn them further.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's the point of being unhelpful, even.
Yeah. And it's kind of dismissive, too.
That's right.
It can be invalidating, kind of.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, if you just pray about that, you'll be fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, well,
I'm not fine.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. I prayed and I'm still not fine.
Yeah. And so I think it's, I think a healthy word prayer life is maybe a better way to look at it.
Right.
Than just, do you know what I mean? Like, prayer life's really, really important, and, always having that thing of, like, pray first about any situation. And the Bible does talk about a spirit of heaviness, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely different, but to clinical depression. I think that's just times where things, that's an acknowledgement that, hey, the devil wants to kill me, and there's going to be stuff that goes wrong in my life because of him wanting to do that.
Right.
And so that spirit of heaviness is something that definitely I think prayer can combat and can help in that situation.
Awesome.
But again, it's the meditation, the prayer, goes back to Philippians where you start to think about good things and you just fill in. Yeah. I find a lot with me when I'm, and I'm nowhere near as skilled as you as far as dealing with people, and, I just try and do it in the best way that I can. But I always listen to what they say. So, because I think that your language locates you.
Right.
And I think that out of the overflow of your heart, your mouth speaks.
Yeah.
And so if there's negativity and there's things that people are saying, just in anything, do you know what I mean? That is, I'm a big believer in when you say, hey, I'll pray for you, pray for them right there and then, because 99% of the time we walk away and it's just another thing that we say without actually doing it. It's like, well, pray for me now. Yeah. Even if you're on the phone, hey, let's pray together now. I think it's, I think that's healthy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's not weird.
No.
You know.
There's a safety in that, I think. When you know that you can talk to someone and that they're going to say, hey, let's pray, or I'm going to pray for you, and they do actually do it, and you actually, and they minister to you, they actually pray for you there and then, yeah. rather than it being this token thing that they throw away. I think that's a really important element for building a strong community, yeah. is doing things like that, being like, no, let's be real, let's do it now, let's yeah. just pray now.
And yeah. I think that also comes back to being, you know, true to your word. Like, if you're going to do something, do it. Because
yeah.
I think that's exactly that sense of trust. The drawbridge can come down when there is an element of trust and trustworthiness. Right. And so if you say to someone, hey, I'm going to give you a call and check in, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the erosion of that depth of relationship becomes something, you know, and we are pretty casual with our words, but we need to learn not to be.
Yeah, awesome. I'm going to do something real quick. Everyone stand up, stretch, reach the sky, turn around and high five three people. Shake it off, shake it off, shake it off. My hands are very sweaty, so I'm not going to...
She's going to go crazy if I like.
Have a stretch and sit back down. Shake it off.
Shake it off. Shake it off.
Feel better? Good. Sometimes you just need to reset a little bit. We're gonna this next few minutes, we'll go for a few more minutes. We're gonna get really practical. We're gonna try and get a bit practical around this. And talk about we'll talk about helping friends. So Stephen, you've walked friends through pretty tough journeys before, depression, all that kind of stuff. What would your practical advice be for us if we do have a friend that admits to us that they're going through a really difficult time? What should we actually do if we have a conversation like that?
Yeah, look, I think the first thing to understand is that, you know, physically you can kind of assist, but not a lot of us are skilled in the area of actually, do you know what I mean? Like really diving deep into that.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about, like the example I had, a really close friend of mine got to a point where he couldn't leave his house just through anxiety and fear and depression and just not being able to face anything. And in my lack of skill, I just thought, you know what, to me, you just got to get dirty with them.
Yeah.
You know, and I just jumped in the muck with him, and right. I would go there and I would just grab him and we'd do little things. We'd walk 100 steps,
right,
or 50 steps, and he'd achieve a small thing, and then we'd take him back and he'd walk 100 steps.
You are a clinician. That's exposure therapy. It's a step ladder hierarchy. It's exactly how you treat.
But
agoraphobia.
I just thought if he can start to feel successful about something,
it's beautiful.
Do you know what I mean? Just little things. I can do this
right.
and I can achieve
right.
this. And it just starts, you just saw this confidence build to the point where he could then go and do something. And look, he's a really good welder and I was building a full drive truck at the time that needed welding. So I was like, oh, you should just weld this truck up for me and it would be part of your therapy. And to this day, he will talk about that saved his life.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? Because he had a small purpose or a small thing. And for me, it's just that physical thing. You know, we lose so... Like, people that get in that state, it seems like it snowballs into this, I just suck at everything, I lose at everything, I can't... There's no way I can get... And to just achieve a small thing...
Yeah.
Just sort of lifted them up and just picked them up a little bit.
That's awesome.
You know, and I just... I didn't say, the interesting thing is I wasn't like super positive, but I was kind of firm, but just kept my word in every single thing that I did.
Right.
And didn't promise that, like over promise and under deliver.
Yeah.
So I just said, look, I'm not skilled in it. I'll do what I can. If I can come around once a week, I'll come around once a week. All right.
Awesome.
Do you know what I mean? I didn't over promise.
That's great.
And I think it's just, man, just show people you care. Just get in the muck with them. You know what I mean? I think whether you're If you're, you know, if you're in that situation, you feel like you're drowning in this quicksand, the fact that someone's just willing to jump in there with you sometimes can be enough to just keep your head above water.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? And then the two of you will kind of figure it out. Mm. Someone like Renee will see you drowning and help you like, out.
Oh. We'll sit in the pit together. Yeah. So it's fine sitting in the pit. Sometimes we're avoidant of that. Like, oh.
Yeah,
but actually, it's okay to sit there for a while. You'll get out.
Yeah, and I think it's really this, I don't know, there's times where you're not living your best life. Everything does feel like it sucks. And if someone just jumps in there with you and isn't, oh, poor you, but it's just like, hey, what's going on?
Mm.
What can I, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're sitting down here, cool, yeah. I'll sit with you.
I'll just be present.
Yeah, look at this pretty interesting pit.
Like what you've done with the place. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Because I think that's what Jesus did.
It's absolutely
I think
right.
Jesus just sat there and was like,
yeah. That's cool. So good. He totally did. Yeah.
I'll sit there with you.
Yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
And yeah, that's the simple way of doing it. And to me, the more you understand, and I got to keep coming back to it, but Know Jesus, find community, discover purpose. If you have not done the Next Step course, you are doing you and everyone around you a disjustice. Mm. Because until you figure out what you're meant to do on this earth, man, the power that comes and the security that comes from you understanding why you're here on this earth, man, it's incredible.
That's absolutely right.
Do you know what I mean? And you're not insecure because you're like, you can't be me.
Yeah.
You can try, and I can't be you, you know. And from that, it allows me to just see people the way that Jesus sees them and become passionate about them the way he does.
Awesome.
Because I'm not looking for recognition, or I'm not looking for this, or I'm not looking for that. I know exactly what I'm called to do, and so I can start to become passionate about what he's passionate about.
Mm.
Do you know
That's
what I mean?
Awesome. Renee, what about holding boundaries? So often we have friends that might come and tell us something that they're going through. And then often the fear that we have is how do I protect myself walking through this? What kind of advice do you have in that situation, keeping boundaries?
Well, it was interesting because just on the back of that and in light of that, I was just thinking there's a verse in Proverbs and it says, she equips herself with strength, which is spiritual, mental and physical fitness for her God-given task, and makes her arms strong. And I think that in that, first of all, we need to know what our God-given task is, and that can change through our life at different points and different intervals. But then we also need to be able to equip, and it's a very practical, deliberate, proactive thing to do. It's not like we just wake up one morning and we're like, oh, I'm so equipped. No, I have to work hard to be equipped.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I work hard at my craft. I work hard at looking after myself. I work hard at my spiritual health, my mental health, my personal mental health. And so I think that in light of that as well, if we don't have good boundaries, if we don't actually have the art of assertiveness, and assertiveness is a really, really wonderful but important skill, that means we can say no without feeling bad or guilty, but we can also express what our own needs and wants are. And I think, unfortunately, in some ways as Christians, we might know what our needs and wants are, but we're not really good at often expressing that. And so it doesn't mean our needs and wants will be met if we're assertive, but it means, first of all, we can express what they are. So if it is around somebody maybe needing more time than I can actually give, and if I need to give that, it's going to take me out for my other God-given requirements, then I need to set really healthy boundaries around that. So like what Stephen was saying about being predictable. If I say, you know what, I can commit to calling you once a week and I'd love to have a chat for 15 minutes, but outside of that time, you can't bombard me with text messages every night. You can't come and move into my house because I'm concerned for your safety. We've got professionals for that, you know. So it's about also understanding what I can be responsible for, casting my cares onto the one who holds all the cares, and not taking responsibility for stuff that was never mine to hold anyway.
That's right. That's awesome. We'll make this the last question. We could go on forever talking about this stuff. Is there anything that you guys do personally to really look after your own mental health, your own thought life? Is there anything that you have stapled into your day or your week that you just you commit to just to keep yourself going and healthy? Four-wheel driving?
I'm a massive podcaster, like huge, because I used to commute from the Shire to the city every day, so listen to like 4 million podcasts. I take a walk at some point of the day on my own with no phone or anything for at least 10 minutes, even if it's in the middle of the day. And I just feel like that resets everything.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that for me is that. And I try and have more positive input into my eyes and ears than negative input.
Great.
That's my healthy thing. And I judge the health of my mental health by how I react to situations, having two young boys and a fairly high-pressure job.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? So I know triggers and I go, oh, hang on, I need some more positive, or I need some good in there. And I've gotten to an age where I know situations that aren't healthy for me, because there's temptations that live in those situations that the Bible talks about. And it doesn't say overcome them. It says, nah, put your Nikes on and get out of there.
Get out of there.
Do you know what I mean?
Run.
Even God's like, yeah, nah, don't hang around there.
Don't try it, yeah.
You know, and so I know in you know, and I'm just being real with you guys, but I know in business situations and in work situations, the things that are temptations for me because of my upbringing, because of what I've experienced, and I just don't put myself in that situation anymore. That's
really
great. Healthy for your mind.
Awesome.
Because guilt will destroy you.
Yeah. Renee?
I would say I've also learnt probably the hard way. I've burnt out, and so I do have some non-negotiables. One for me is that I've got a dog. I think it's probably the most underutilized mental health tool ever. A dog is amazing. It makes you exercise. It's unconditional positive regard when I walk through the door. I'm socializing because I'm meeting everyone in my community, because I have to get the dog out the door, otherwise he destroys everything.
That's awesome.
I think having a dog, but actually also for me, I think for me, two things. Probably the word of God for me is it's a non-negotiable.
Yeah,
it's like manna from heaven. And actually, I know that I'm very quick to misalign with what the truth says. And it's very easy for me to kind of drift. And so I need to have that as my anchor point.
Fantastic.
And so I've had to be creative over time about when I can read the word. I don't have more than 7 minutes literally every day. It's often when I'm on the loo, because that's my only time when I don't have three children and a dog around me. So I've been creative about times to do that. And the other thing I'd say is fun, and making that actually deliberate time for fun.
Awesome.
For just fun, for fun's sake. We need to have more fun, and fun is important.
Yeah,
even when I don't feel like it, I still make sure we do something fun.
That's very good.
You just threw gritted teeth. This is so fun.
This is so good. I mean, it's such a good time.
Enjoy it, children. It's fun.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think it's really important as you experience life, keep a list somewhere on your phone or somewhere of your non-negotiables, of your staples that you do every single day or every single week that you know really fill you up. Because you'll have experiences, you might go for a walk without your phone and come back and go, wow, that felt really good. That's an important thing to take note of. Like, cool, do that every day and it'll help you. Or maybe you hung out with a specific person and they really filled you up. Take note and pursue to like, hey, once a week, let's go hang out. I just love being around you. I think it's good. It's good for both of us. So find a few things and just work it into your schedule, work into your life and protect it. Protect it. Why don't you give these guys a huge hand? Thank you so much. So grateful. So much wisdom. Amazing. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode. We really hope it helped. You can follow us on Instagram or Facebook at c3.youngadults. We would love to hear any questions you might have, or if you've got ideas for topics, please send us a message and we can record an episode about it and discuss it. We wish you all the best and we will catch you next time.